say, ah.
This podcast is brought to you by Plus One. Plus One is breaking down barriers and outdated taboos regarding sexual self-pleasure with their line of beautiful, high-performance and affordable sexual wellness devices and products. Plus One has already made major strides towards eliminating the stigma of sexual self-pleasure by making beautiful packaged sexual wellness products available at selected Dis-Chem pharmacies nationwide. Plus One devices are also available at selected intimate stores and click stores online. All products are manufactured with the highest quality body-safe silicone and are waterproof. Plus One devices have 10 vibration settings and come with a USB charging cable for ease of use. Please find at selected Dis-Chem stores or Clicks online store and follow them on Facebook at +1ZA, all written out, and Instagram +1_ZA. Thank you to Plus One for supporting and breaking the stigmas of sexual self-pleasure. This is what we need. Welcome to Open Wide Say Ah with myself, Lika Lolas. This is season 2. I can't believe it. And this is the podcast where we talk about all things sex. We talk about the things that are taboo, the things that are skipped over, the things that our parents don't talk to us about, teachers don't talk to us about, that we often are shy to ask our friends or ask each other. This is the place where we will get all of the tea. Okay, so today I am joined by somebody that I feel like I watch like a stalker from like a distance. And so it feels like this is an interview that I would have with a really close friend or a sibling. And so I want them to introduce themselves and tell us a bit about yourself. Tell us your name, your pronouns, what you do, how you relate to sex, anything. Just like dive in.
Okay. Well, thank you for having me. It is exciting. And yeah, it feels special that this is one of our first like proper conversations. So my name is Jacana Joy Redcliffe. And my pronouns are they, them, and it's been fun to spell them like femme. I am trans, mask, non-binary femme person, which has also been fun to play around and see if I wanted she, her pronouns, and if they were affirming for me, and they actually weren't. But it's affirming for me to think of myself as trans, mask, femme. I am South African. I am brown. I prefer the word brown to colored because that was given to us or placed on us under apartheid. I also been helpful to think of myself as indigenous, even though there's so much of my history that I don't know. I don't know. I think the last thing I want to say about my identity, beyond being fat and neurodivergent, and queer, is that I believe in a triune God that looks like the Christian one that was given to me, but is actually very queer and very polyamorous. So I believe in this queer Jesus thing that I'm still making sense of.
Yeah. That's so dope. Firstly, I'll touch on just like being non-binary and being trans-mask and yet incorporating the femme and what that looks like. And I'm so here for a queer Jesus. My mother is not very religious, but quite like, faith-based. Mm. And, she has always said that, you know, like God doesn't have a gender. Mm. And so I know that God is non-binary, but where's the conversation about like God being queer and God being, you know, like, yeah, polyamorous, it all. I love that.
Yeah.
You touched on being fat and being
neurodivergent.
Neurodivergent. Mm. What is neurodivergent?
I think I'm still pushing into what that means for me and for other people, but I have chronic illness my whole life, starting with eczema and asthma, and then but my most recent diagnosis was ADHD only when I was 21. And that's so funny because I've been thinking so much about how neurodivergency is diagnosed so late in AFABs, people assigned female at birth, because of gendered socialization, and because we taught to mask these behaviors. So yeah, I see my neurodivergence in my ADHD and how much it affects life things, like being late today because my perception of time is wacky. And then also just the ways that masking has caused generalized anxiety for me because I couldn't externalize like many AMABs can. And so yeah, I also see mental illness play into neurodivergence. Yeah, that's what I understand by it.
Okay, thank you. Thank you for the enlightening to us all. I am quite bad with like terms. And I think it's from like access to language or just like my reading ability is really, really like low because I don't keep the words in. And so I will hear a word and then I'm like, no, I don't know what that word is. And then the word is gone.
Yeah.
Where in actual fact, you know, I should just ask. Okay. So when we normally have discussions around sex and when we see sex in media and we hear about sex, there seems to be a lack of discussion around sex and pleasure and desire, that includes fat people or includes people with disabilities or people that don't fit into what society has kind of like taught us as this white patriarchal capitalist money making machine of what we are supposed to look like and kind of force down our throats. And that we see like in what like a woman has to look like, what a man has to look like, what non-binary has to look like, what, you know, what our bodies are supposed to look like, what's too masculine, too feminine, too strong, too whatever, what healthy is supposed to be.
Yeah.
And yeah, I saw an interesting post a while ago, from a disabled, person that said this person was so shocked at being attracted to me and being like sexually wanting me and not in a fetishizing way. And why is that a surprise? Like, why am I not desired? Why have you been taught that you can't desire me and that you can't be attracted to me? And yeah, I just wanted to ask you, how do you relate to that when you're not constantly seeing yourself in the media of what sex and pleasure and desire is?
I think initially when you sent these questions to me, I was confused about who was surprised in that interaction. Because definitely as a fat person, I have been surprised when people have found me attractive. Me being surprised. But you talking about the other person having that attraction. I don't know. I haven't thought so much about that. I've recently thought about how everybody that finds me attractive now has to really interrogate their own queerness, especially if they think they're straight, because being attracted to me would mean that you're queer and not straight, which is funny. But I know that I, even when I was younger and not half as fat as what I am now, I wasn't fat. I just thought that I was, because that's what fat society tells you. But the first boy that asked me out, I was like, you must be joking. There's no way that you can find me attractive. I just couldn't believe that anybody could have found me attractive. So I was very surprised by that. And I think when you don't look like what society tells you should look like to be attractive, you almost expect less from the desire,
You kind of analyze it and critique it.
Yeah, you're like, is this real? And I think that's where the fetishizing comes in. But people who find fat people and disabled people attractive don't deserve brownie points at all.
Yeah.
I think what was important for me is realizing my own internalized fat phobia and that my partners or sexual partners or relational partners, most of them haven't been fat. And that's the majority of them have not been fat. Mm. And for me to sit with myself and be like, Jacana, why is this? Like, this is still you finding non-fat people attractive. Like, you need to push into where the self-hate comes from. And something you said about like really exposing ourselves via social media to black and brown fat people claiming space and being beautiful and sensual and sexy has been so important for me.
Mm. I think for me, one of the biggest, like, I don't know, it's like I didn't see it or like think that I was fat phobic at all to myself and to any other bodies, because I'm just like so obsessed with body. I literally am obsessed with bodies, and not in a fetishizing way, in a way of like, I could stare into a vagina or into an asshole for like ever, as if I've never seen one before, and just like look and like understand and like see and go like, oh my God, that's so amazing, you know? And that's how I feel about all bodies. But when my therapist said to me, you know, start looking on social media who you are following and what you are seeing, and follow more like fat queer people of color, and see how like space needs to be like given and taken up by people that love themselves, and the, you know, the understanding of what body positivity is. This is a conversation that's been happening, and now we're kind of in like a world where we celebrate curves, but only particular curves. You know, only curves that look a certain way. And that's really not body positive. And fat people have been like sitting on social media and experiencing the world in a way that they have to constantly fight for themselves. And if you love yourself in this cruel world, then like, I need to learn from you, because the way I hate on myself because of what I've been taught and what we've been taught, like, I'm not surprised that like most of your partners have not been fat, you know, like, when I sit on Tinder, I'm just like, all of a sudden start critiquing myself. I'm like, who have you been swiping on? And why that way? And get off this app. Like, just get off it and like stop critiquing people on looks and appearances. And yeah, it gets a bit weird. And do you feel like you experience a lot of fetishization in the world, like in your queerness?
Yeah, so I don't think I've experienced fetishization in my fatness. I think what has been interesting in me pushing into finding fatness attractive in a sexual way is actually only been able to do that through porn initially. And porn is so fetishizing. Any sort of, any fat bodies that I've seen having sex or pleasure together is very, fetishizing and not like, it doesn't look like how I would want sex to look. So that's been interesting. But yes, definitely fetishized in my queerness and especially in my trans non-binariness, which I didn't see as fetishizing initially, until I had more and more cishet men be like, what are you? Like, what? Or like show like a lot of interest or like super like. And then I was like, what is this? This is weird. And like the line of questioning was gross. Gross in a very like, what is that word? Like very like, I mean, it's fetishizing. It's very like objectifying and like colonial in gaze, and like you're a curiosity.
I feel that. Like the colonial gaze, like that's a thing that's also like missing from the conversations around like brown queer bodies, but especially when you want to fuck up the boxes, like when you're like, no, I don't have to look like this, you know, then you will be interrogated. You know, when our bodies are so critiqued and kind of we are looked at of how we can market certain products so that people look like us, or how we can be targeted to buy and kind of soak up like diet culture and pill culture and kind of a tiny waist, tiny tummies, big butts, like whatever it is, the standards, you know, they keep changing, long hair, super curly, defined hair. It's dangerous and it's really damaging because at some point we either don't see ourselves anymore in like being represented, or we are chasing to look like the thing that is being represented. And how do you, as especially as a queer person and as like a brown person and a fat person, and you know, like how do you take up space? How do you assert yourself and go like, make sure that you are seen so that someone else, you know, is seeing themselves in you and is kind of, yeah, just, you know, is getting represented through you.
And then my brother said something funny to me the other day about how how he finds it so strange that with my insecurities, I start making them very loud so that I would feel secure about them. So I start like focusing in on them, and everybody else does too. It's almost like I have to become secure in them. I don't know if that makes sense, but I think maybe what helps is I don't know if you've seen or heard disabled people who use wheelchairs speak about how they'll wear funny t-shirts that say, "Yes, I know you're staring. Look," you know. Or there's a Instagram page that I followed of fat people with tattoos, called Fatism or something like that. But just over and over and over, fat people are talking about how putting tattoos on their body was such a incredible process of learning to love this skin and these rolls and these and these stretch marks so much more because there was art on it. And I think I've done a lot of loving of my tummy and the bigness of my tummy, and watching as it like shakes when it when I laugh or shakes when I cry, because I'm such an emotive person. And so putting this big humpback whale on my tummy was really, really important. And now I can wear a bikini for the first time in my life, but be the fattest in my life, but now feel more comfortable wearing a bikini because there's this thing decorating my body. And the symbolism of whales being fat and magnificent is also really important. I have a cute little thing. One of my ex-partners would, while we were having sex, would look at my whale on my tummy and say, "William, are you ready for a splash?" And then go down on me. And it was the first time I'd also squirted, which was incredible.
Oh my
and
God.
So all of those link and just make me feel so good about my fat body and my fat body receiving pleasure. And yeah, finding new ways that my body could do things like squirting is like, wow, that was very cool. I think the part of my body that I still struggle with is my double chin, or my like the fatness in my face. That's an interesting one, because I think it's again like how you were saying, body positivity movement being taken over, what's the better word there, but and almost been taken, moving away from fat liberation just to body positivity that still looks very white and still looks fat in particular ways, like curvy. And so we still don't talk about this fatness around one's face. And so I don't know, maybe it would help if I got a tattoo on it. Oh, maybe it wouldn't, but it's just, I think this is also why fat activists are speaking about body neutrality rather than positivity, because we don't always feel positive about our bodies.
What is, if you can explain, what is body neutrality, like a neutral?
I think it's the difference between going, "Oh my God, I love my rolls. Like my rolls are, you know, these... Or like looking at my stretch marks and being like, "Oh, isn't it incredible how my body makes room for more of me," which it is. But I don't always feel like that. Sometimes I look in the mirror and I'm like, "Fuck, man. Like, why do I have to be in this body? Why do I have to be bound by this fat body?" And then just being like, actually, this body served me well for like 24 years. And I have a fat tummy, and that's just a fact. I have a fat chin. That also shows up when I'm crying and laughing so much more, like it, which is beautiful. But yeah, it's just being almost matter of fact about what your body looks like, rather than being like, "Oh, I'm celebrating it," which is not how we feel.
Yeah. I think I need to learn that, because I critique certain parts of my body that if you closed my eyes, I could sketch it or explain it like perfectly because there's just an obsession with a certain, you know, like certain parts instead of just going like, yeah, okay, yeah, I have that like three lines underneath my bum that is not part of my bum. I don't quite know where it fits. And yeah, it's there, you know, and it's not, I'm not saying that I love it because I clearly don't love it, but I also don't hate it. And yeah, it exists. Like, fuck, I'm 31 years old and still a bitch. Like, it's fine. Yeah, I wanted to ask you about how you, relate to sex and what your sex, you know, has been like, and what your pleasure and desire kind of like centers around. And I love when you said, you know, to explore what your body can do and find new things. Yeah. So like, what is your queer sex like? What does it look like? What is, yeah, do you incorporate, like, you know, your tummy? Do you do the things? Yeah.
I think sex is thinking about my relationship with sex and where it started is very connected to being brought up in a Christian home. And so my initial experiences with sex wasn't masturbation like it often is for people, because I was just so frowned upon and not something that I thought that I could ever engage in, or not something I did as a girl, when I thought I was a girl. And so the first time I had sex was with a, I don't know. Yeah, I don't know how they identify now because I'm not in contact with them, but with an AFAB. And so the first sex I had was queer, which is always interesting to me. And that relationship was what it was. But I think, when I got into a much longer term relationship, my roommate at the time had a boyfriend, and when she came back looking like all sexed-eyed, she'd be like, yeah, we got creative. And so she'd always call sex getting creative, which is just right? Yeah. It's such a great way of thinking about sex. And I think even more so as I've had more queer sex, I mean, all sex can be queer, but as I've had more sex with other people who have vaginas, I've just realized how intentional and creative sex is, and deviates from this like penis and vagina heteronormative shit that we were taught. And so this idea of sex and pleasure being creative is just an exciting one, because it means it's endless, right?
Yeah.
It also just, that's why when people say, oh yeah, sex became boring with this person, I'm like, okay, but like, it's, yeah, it's just this boundless, limitless thing that we get to be a part of, and co-create together. Yeah,
I'm so shook. Like, you should have been on my podcast that I've just recorded. That is fully about like pleasure and being creative and how sex can be endless. That it's not on like a linear line of like what sex can look like, especially when it's queer, and that like everyone needs to learn from the queers.
Yes.
Like, we have to find out how our bodies fit with each other.
Yeah.
And if someone says, you know, like, no genital play, like what that sex can look like, you don't all of a sudden go like, oh, I didn't fuck this person. Like, no, we had amazing sex.
Yes.
That sex was just more creative.
Yes.
You know? And so I love that.
Yeah.
I just love how that we're aligned, because but this is a conversation that people don't have. So it is often when you sit in community or sit with people that have similar experiences, you go like, why are we not talking about it?
Yeah.
Why are we not talking about what our sex actually looks like?
Yeah.
Okay, so when it comes to PCOS, like, PCOS is a word that I think a lot of people, even assigned female at birth people, do not know what PCOS is, and you just see like this PCOS thing and you're like, what exactly is that? I don't have the experience to talk about it, and so I would ask you to what is PCOS and what does that look like for you?
Yeah, so PCOS is polycystic ovarian syndrome, and it affects about 10% of people who have ovaries, and so that's a large percentage of the world population. People will say to you that it's a hormone imbalance, and I put quotations around imbalance because I think that idea of imbalance actually just comes from a sexist idea of what hormones are and a binary idea of what hormones are. So people will tell you that there are too many androgens or too much testosterone, too many male hormones in what is considered a female body. Yeah, but so basically it's genetic, it's hormonal, it's metabolic, and it's a reproductive disorder. So because it's a syndrome, it looks very different for people, right? Yeah. It presents very differently for people. They call it polycystic ovarian syndrome because there are many cysts on one's ovaries. And that's the case for some people and not for others. For me, it is the case. I have lots of cysts on my ovaries. And they often cause a lot of pain, depending on what my hormones are doing. It also, lots of people with PCOS often are very anxious or depressed, or go into bouts of depression. And so, yeah, my mood is very, very related to my menstrual cycle, and my irregular menstrual cycle. So that's another symptom of my PCOS being very irregular. So going 3 months without bleeding and then 2 months with bleeding, like straight full on bleeding. What they call, virilization. I think something important to say is that when you were speaking about language and reading and stuff like that is I'm a linguist, an applied social linguist, and at the moment I'm doing my honors, and I'm looking at queer linguistics, which is a very recent field, so looking at gendered language and healthcare practices. But anyway, so why am I saying this? Virilization. So virilization, this word comes from virile Latin, meaning coming from the word man, so male pattern hair. So PCOS, people with PCOS will often have beards or moustaches, or they'll get male pattern balding. So people either have like a loss of hair that we often see in men, or hair in places that we often see in men. So those are some of my symptoms. It's the hair thing has been very interesting, for me, because it's almost affirmed me even more in my non-binariness.
Yeah, I was going to say, with being trans mask,
yeah,
there's an element that I'm sure is affirming or like that's loved.
Yeah, definitely. Like I used to hate my moustache because it just showed that I was deviant from this, what we know is fake gender binary, sex binary. But I always hated it growing up and was teased for it growing up. And now I love it. I'm still struggling with the hair that's now developing on my like chin and my... And I think it's just because it's a new development, but also because it accentuates my double chin even more. But I also think that something important that we need to think about is just like this idea that you're not more or less feminist or intersectionally feminist if you want to remove some of your hair and you want to keep some of your other hair, right? Mm-hmm. Like this idea of like you don't need to be a bra burning, an armpit not shaving person to be valid in your feminism. Mm-hmm. Feminism and intersectional feminism is about having the choice of doing what makes you feel affirmed or not. And so if I were to remove this hair but keep this hair, that's fine.
No, I love that. Also, I hate it when feminism is centered around having body hair or, you know, it's like, no, it's about autonomy. Mm-hmm. Like, it's about the choices and the power that we have and that we should have over our own bodies and about literally being equal. I mean, if I wanted to wax every single hair off my body, do it. It's your body. You know, that's feminist in its ways. Mm. Yeah. Thank you for sharing like what PCOS is and what it looks like for you. I know that it is individually based and that it looks different for each person. How has it come into affecting you sexually or affecting your sex life at all? Or what your sex can look like maybe while going through a particular time in your cycle, or, you know, that maybe you gear away, completely away from sex at certain times, you know.
It's a funny, question, because, sex often, and often, penetrative sex vaginally for me, almost becomes functional. Like, I very much enjoy sex for the pleasure of it. But sex with somebody else, or even sex with myself with toys, becomes functional at some stage in my cycle, where I'm like, I can feel that my uterus is teetering on the edge of bleeding, but it's just not. And it's almost like I need some phallic like thing to go in there and like shake me up so that the bleed
loosen
comes.
It up.
Yeah. And it's so funny. Like, I would see that often with first few partners being like, I need you to like fuck me good so that this bleed can come. So that's interesting.
I love that.
Yeah. It's a funny one. Like, especially when I first started having sex with people, and then suddenly my bleed will come, and they're like, oh, and then we have to have a conversation around like whether they fuck with period sex or not, and all the complexes that come around that. But saying to them, literally, this was healing for me. You sexing me was healing for me, because now I can bleed. And because my bleed is such a time of reflection for me, which is so important. I yearn for that bleed to come, especially when it takes like 2-3 months to come. And I feel like I have this backlog of emotional processing that needs to happen. So yeah, in that way, sex is both functional and healing. And that really relates to my PCOS. Yeah.
Functional sex. I have some functional sex too. You know, I think one of the first times I saw you was listening to you talk about functional sex and related to your PCOS. I did not know who you were, and I was just like, wow, I thought I had confidence. But like, that is bravery. Like, not the Raptorum. It was
raunchy renditions.
Yes, raunchy renditions, sharing sexual stories. Have shared, spoken about it before. Tapiwa on season one was also like where I met him. And just to have a platform to like share sexual stories, but to meet you there and to kind of then kind of stalk and see who you are.
That stalking was definitely mutual.
And then to like have you here, and just for me to have learned so much more. And I'm sure for both of us to have done like different growths in our gender expressions and like who we are, and to kind of come to a point to now talking about sex again. It's just quite like circular.
Yes.
What is something that you think we need to discuss, or that you think is missing from our mainstream, that's kind of like unknown and not spoken about when it comes to PCOS? Because I mean, PCOS is really something that it affects so many people, like you're saying, but it's really just like not known about, and we just don't talk about it. So what would you like people to understand about PCOS and how it affects bodies? How can we be less ableist in our ways of talking about sex and just talking about PCOS and talking about our bodies? What do you feel like the world and society kind of needs to know and kind of needs to deal with?
I think, three things, maybe two things, but there would be a lot less ableism and a lot less fat phobia in PCOS if one actually tackled how much society hates fat people, and how much society demonizes and discriminates against fat people. And that's so funny, because the medical fraternity it contradicts itself. The average diagnosis period for people who have PCOS is 10 years, which is like ludicrous, because when I say to you, PCOS is metabolic, it's hormonal, it's all of these different things. There are so many signs to show when someone has PCOS that for it to take 10 years for doctors to notice is bullshit. Mm. And then what's even funnier is doctors are so quick to diagnose fat people with PCOS, but don't actually pick up on thin people who have PCOS because they think of it as that link is so strong. So I think that's an important thing to think about. I also think one of the ways we could be less ableist is when speaking about people who do menstruate, not thinking about menstruation as being regular. Like, it's so normative to us to think of menstruation as being regular. It's very irregular for many, many people. And I often feel left out of conversations when my friends are talking about, oh yeah, my bleed is coming or my this, or I'm ovulating. And I'm like, I don't know what the fuck my body's doing because it's always doing all these different things. And then the last thing is, as I've gone pushed into communities, PCOS communities online, there's this lovely word that people think they're so clever for making, like white women thought they were so clever for making woman with an X, is this word sisters, but spelt C-Y-S-T-E-R. So again, just so sexist, because I have PCOS, but I am not cis. And there are lots of trans masc people who do have PCOS.
Yeah. Mm. I think it's the way that we talk about anatomy and the way we talk about sex and the way we talk about, like, just all experiences. I also need to take note when teaching about menstruation in schools and trying to teach how to follow your cycle and how to understand your cycle and understand your hormones, that's not the same trajectory. I like that word.
Mm.
It's not the same experience for everyone. Mm. And so, in teaching that in that way, we alienate, and then someone will think that there's something wrong with them or assume that they are pregnant because they haven't had a menstruation, and what, like, cycles can look like. That really needs to be included so that we also know our own bodies, and we can also pick up on things when doctors are not willing to, you know. That's really, that's great. Can you tell us one funny thing related to sex and that you would want, or anything you want kind of like incorporated in a sex podcast that like speaks to you and reflects you?
I don't know if I have I don't have specific funny stories. I have, like, the first time having that penetrative vaginal penis sex, I had been with my partner for a long time, and he had a lovely big dick, and it took a long time to have penetrative sex, so we were just having oral sex all the time. And then when we did have penetrative sex, it was just such a funny experience, and we just laughed and laughed and laughed. And if I ever have the immense responsibility and privilege of bringing up humans and children in this world, I'd want to tell them that sex is supposed to be fun, and that it can be filled with laughter and weird noises and farting and queefing and, you know, I think I shared this once at Raunchy Renditions, but some of the public sex I've had has been lots of fun just because it feels naughty. I had great sex in Jan Marais Park, and Jan Marais was just a fucking racist guy who helped fund a lot of Stellenbosch University. So having sex in that park just felt so like
reparations.
Yeah, an act of decolonization.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, that's amazing. So I just want to say thank you for loving yourself so hard and for loving yourself so, like, outwardly, so that we can see reflections of ourselves and learn how to love ourselves fully by watching you love yourself. Where can we find you? Where can people reach out to you? Are you comfortable with something like that? Where can people learn? Yeah, we are the places.
I mean, yeah, I think I'm most active on Instagram, them like femme. My account is on private just because people have scared me in the past. Mm-hmm. But yeah, there, and I think I often post about people who have been influential in my learning to love myself. And so, yeah, I think it would be following on those people once you followed me. I don't know. That's helpful. Great. Yeah.
Okay. So thank you everyone for listening to this podcast episode. Thank you, Jocana, for just like opening up the conversations that are quite difficult to have, even if it is in private. Mm. And so now to put this out on a platform, I just want to say thank you. Thank you for teaching, because I'm learning and I hope listeners are learning.
Yeah.
So thank you so much.
Thank you too for the space.
Yes, sir.
Open wide. Say.